Welcome back to Science TLDR. This is our deep dive segment where we really get into the details of important new research.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're tackling a really fascinating paper. It's titled Testing Two Prominent Theories of Consciousness in a Large-Scale Adversarial Collaboration. And it just came out in Nature.
Yeah, this is a big one. It dives straight into, you know, one of the hardest questions in neuroscience. How does our subjective feeling, our consciousness, actually relate to the physical stuff happening in our brains?
Exactly. It's a question people have debated for, well, forever, really.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't have one single neuroscientific theory everyone agrees on.
Which is kind of wild when you think about it. And finding that theory, or at least converging on one, has huge implications, right? Medically, ethically.
Absolutely. So this paper tries to push things forward by directly comparing two major players. Integrated Information Theory, or IIT.
And Global Workspace Theory, GNWT.
And what's really cool, I think, is how they did it. They set up this large-scale open science adversarial collaboration.
Right. So you have people who champion IIT, people who champion GNWT, and crucially, researchers who are theory neutral, all working together.
The idea being to try and overcome that natural tendency we all have, confirmation bias, when testing theories we're invested in. It's a really interesting approach to the scientific process itself.
Definitely. So maybe we should briefly touch on what these theories actually propose.
Good idea. So IIT fundamentally sees consciousness as something intrinsic to a network based on how much information it integrates. It's quantified by this measure called phi.
And proponents generally think the main action, the physical substrate for this, is likely in the posterior cortex, the back of the brain dealing a lot with sensory input.
Sort of like consciousness emerges from the complex interconnected chatter back there.
That's one way to think about it. Yeah, it's about the structure and its capacity for integration.
Okay. And GNWT, how does that differ?
Well, GNWT suggests consciousness happens when information gets sort of globally broadcast across the brain. It becomes available to many different cognitive processes simultaneously.
Like shining a spotlight on specific information.
Exactly. And this broadcasting is thought to heavily involve the prefrontal cortex, the PFC, involved in executive functions along with associated parietal areas.
So IIT points to the back, GNWT more to the front, broadly speaking.
That's the core geographical disagreement they focused on here, yeah. They look specifically at these testable biological implementations, posterior cortex for IIT, PFC for GNWT.
And they didn't just talk about it. They designed specific experiments with pre-registered predictions, clear pass-fail criteria.
Which is vital for this kind of adversarial setup, no moving the goalposts later.
Think about looking at the Mona Lisa, right? You're conscious of her identity, her orientation, maybe where she is in the painting, how long you're looking. It's multifaceted.
Uh-huh. The experiment tried to capture some of that richness.
So what did they actually do in the experiment?
Okay, so participants saw sequences of images. These could be faces, objects, letters, or even meaningless false fonts.
Different categories.
Right. And within those categories, the specific identity could change. The orientation, if a face was looking left, right, or straight ahead, and how long it stayed on screen, like half a second, 1.5 seconds.
It's lots of dimensions changing.
Exactly. And they also played with task relevance. Sometimes participants had to look for targets in the pictorial categories, faces and objects. Other times, in the symbolic ones, letters and false fonts.
What's the advantage of setting it up like that?
Well, it allows for really robust testing of what specific content is represented consciously. It also helps minimize confusion from just doing the task or reporting it, separating that from the conscious experience itself.
And it lets them test some interesting predictions about time, like how long the brain represents something you saw.
Precisely. And they threw a lot of tech at it. fMRI, MEG, even intracranial EEG.
Wow, IEG too. That's quite invasive.
Yeah, in patients who already had electrodes implanted for medical reasons, obviously. But it gives you incredible temporal and spatial precision. And they had large sample sizes across several labs.
So fMRI on 120 people, MEG on 102, IEG on 34. That's serious scale. Makes the findings more generalizable.
Absolutely. And another key point, the theory proponents were kept separate from the data collection and the main analysis pipeline.
To further reduce potential bias. Smart.
They had an initial analysis optimization phase on some data, then locked everything down and ran the final tests on completely independent data. Very rigorous.
Okay, so the main goal of the analysis was decoding, trying to read out from the brain activity what the person was seeing.
Essentially, yes. Could they decode the stimulus category? Was it a face or an object? And could they decode its orientation? Was the face looking left or right from those key brain regions?
And succeeding in decoding both category and orientation was the pre-registered pass criterion for a region truly representing the conscious content.
Correct. So, the results.
Let's hear it. What did they find most strongly?
The most consistent finding across fMRI, MEG, and IEG was successful decoding of both category distinguishing faces from objects, for instance, and orientation, specifically for faces, in the posterior cortex.
Ah, okay. So the back of the brain did seem to hold information about both what was seen and its specific features, like orientation. Similar results for letters versus false fonts, too.
Qualitatively similar, yes, though maybe the face-object distinction was a bit stronger. But the key is, category and orientation decoding seemed robust in posterior areas.
Interesting. And what about the prefrontal cortex, the area highlighted by GNWT?
That's where it gets really intriguing. They generally failed to reliably decode orientation from the PFC.
No orientation signal in the front.
Largely absent, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, they did find some evidence for decoding the category in the PFC, especially if you look at the whole brain fMRI analyses.
The searchlight analyses.
Right. Those showed some category decoding, but it was generally less accurate than in the posterior regions and seemed more spatially restricted. It wasn't as widespread or as strong.
And the cross-task generalization. Could the category signal found during, say, the face task also be seen when the person was doing the letter task?
That generalization seemed much better, much more distributed in the posterior regions compared to the PFC. It suggests the representation in the back might be more stable, less dependent on the specific task.
Okay, let's try to pull out some main takeaways from just these initial decoding results we've discussed.
Sounds good.
First, it seems pretty clear that you can decode detailed conscious content, both what something is and its specific features like orientation from activity in the posterior cortex. That supports the idea these regions are heavily involved.
Agreed. Takeaway one, posterior cortex robustly represents conscious content details.
Second, the relative lack of orientation decoding in the prefrontal cortex is problematic for standard interpretations of GNWT, isn't it?
Yeah.
If consciousness requires broadcasting all relevant features to the PFC, why isn't orientation represented there strongly?
Exactly. Takeaway two, representing specific features like orientation seems weak or absent in PFC, challenging GNWT's view of it holding all conscious content.
And third, just looking at category information, while it's found in both areas to some extent, the representation seems more widespread, more accurate, and more task-independent in the posterior cortex compared to the PFC.
Right. Takeaway three. Posterior cortex shows more robust and generalized category representation than PFC.
So if you look at the overall scorecard for the theories based on their pre-registered predictions, it's kind of mixed. Right?
It is. IAT seemed to pass some tests, like predicting representations related to stimulus duration, but failed on others, like finding sustained synchronized activity they predicted.
And GNWT faced challenges, like we just discussed, with content representation in the PFC and how percepts are maintained over time, though it got some partial support for category representation.
It's definitely not a simple theory A wins, theory B loses situation, which honestly is probably realistic for such a complex problem.
For sure. And it raises new questions, too. Like, if orientation isn't strongly represented in PFC, how do we maintain that conscious feature over time? And what is the precise role of the PFC if not holding all the specific details?
Absolutely. The study provides really strong evidence, but also refines the questions we need to ask next.
So wrapping up, this large-scale adversarial collaboration seems incredibly valuable. It's a model, perhaps, for how to tackle these really big, contentious questions in science. Rigorous testing, minimizing bias.
Definitely a step forward. It highlights the need for continued rigorous work, integrating evidence across different methods, and refining the theories based on what the data actually shows.
It really underscores the complexity of studying consciousness, trying to bridge that gap between the brain's activity and our subjective world. Something for all of us, especially those of you working in related fields, to think about how can we design even better experiments to tease these things apart.
Indeed. The journey to understanding consciousness is far from over.
A perfect place to leave it for this deep dive. Thanks for walking us through that complex study.
My pleasure.